Get Published, Episode 10A, for Tuesday, July 21st, 2009. Hi there, and welcome to Get Published. I'm your host, Mike Plested. I'm an amateur writer with several short stories, two YA novels, and a fantasy novel completed, and I'm working hard to get published. On today's episode, we hear from Dan, who asks, what is the best way to distribute written work when soliciting comments? We also hear the first half of a terrific interview with J.C. Hutchins. J.C. has a lot of interesting things to say, and I really enjoyed talking to him. I hope you enjoy the show. Thanks for listening.
Some places are far darker than deep space. Places where men go mad and lovers go missing. On July 9th, 2009, take a deep breath, turn off the lights, and dare to visit one of these places. And when the shadows smile, it will be the last thing you'll see. Crescent, the debut novel by Phil Rossi, coming to Amazon.com on July 9th, 2009. Be there to rush the charts and experience the terror. Scott Sigler, New York Times bestselling author of Contagious, calls Crescent the last stop at the intergalactic crossroads of gritty sci-fi and pucker-inducing horror. Blade Runner, as written by H.P. Lovecraft, a horrific, hard sci-fi express ride.
This is Phil Rossi, and I'm inviting you to join me on July 9th, 2009, in taking over the Amazon.com science fiction and horror charts. Let's give big publishing a real reason to tremble. On July 9th at 1 p.m. Eastern, Crescent fans from around the world will storm Amazon.com and buy the book. I'll be streaming a live internet concert and reading, so be sure to visit CrescentStation.net for details.
Crescent, a novel by Phil Rossi. For more information and to download the free audiobook version and the Crescent original soundtrack, visit CrescentStation.net.
Please hang up and try again. And we're back. This segment of the show is dedicated to any questions, comments, and feedback you might have. I must confess, I was a bit nervous about the last episode. I wanted to give you something special to listen to while I was away on holiday, so I recorded my first ever piece of audio fiction. But it was my first piece of audio fiction ever. And I wasn't sure how good it was. It was something I'd written quite a while ago, but I thought it was a good place to start. At any rate, I did get a couple of comments. And the first comment that I received was written on my Facebook wall from Dan Absalonson. And he wrote, "Sweet podcast, Michael. I liked your story a lot. If that's what you could write a decade ago, I can't wait to read or hear more of your stories. I look forward to becoming more of a fan of your stuff." And Dan, I really appreciate that comment. It made my day, and it made me realize that I shouldn't be quite so afraid to post some of my fiction. And it's something that I think you can all expect to see more of in the future. The problem is now I've got to write more fiction to podcast. It's a good problem to have. A second comment was left right on my website. And on my website, Nomad Scry left a comment, and he said, "Nice job on the fiction." Thanks, Nomad. I really appreciate that. You have been a real great supporter. He has been promoting Get Published on his Brainwyrm site, and that is brainwyrms.com, in case you want to check him out. Dan also took the time to send in a question, which I will play for you now.
Hey, Michael. This is Dan in Spokane, Washington. Also a writer in the making, love the podcast, especially the interviews. I think you're good at interviews. It's pretty cool. I had a question about manuscripts. Once you're done writing your manuscript and you've edited it, and you want to get it out to people and share it, what about giving it to people in like a hard copy instead of electronic? I have an e-reader, but most people don't, and I know some really cool guys that are older that have read a lot, and I want to get them to read it, but I feel bad making them read it on a computer screen. I thought one idea was to print off my manuscript and then take it to like a Kinko's and make a bunch of copies. That's probably maybe the cheapest way. So I wondered if you had any ideas on that. Keep up the good work, and I'll keep listening. All right.
Great question, Dan. I know quality feedback is one of those things that a writer can never get enough of. I can certainly understand your hesitation to simply send a PDF to someone for feedback. I guess the first thing I would ask you is, what are you hoping to get back from your test audience? If you're simply trying to gauge their interest in the story, a PDF is probably fine and much cheaper. But if your intent is to get comments throughout the work, hard copy, while more expensive, is definitely the way to go. For myself, hard copy typically works better for those days I'm on the bus. Plus, it has the added benefit that I can make comments right on the manuscript. You even have the option of using print-on-demand services and giving your readers an actual novel. They will experience the book in the way any other novel reader would. Surprisingly, with this method, your readers might actually catch something that they would miss with any other hard copy. I've been told by people who have read my stuff, and I've experienced it as well, that your eye seems to catch stuff in the novel format that it wouldn't otherwise. As with your Kinko's idea, there is a cost involved in this method. Whichever way you choose to go, it's important to let your test readers know up front what your expectations are. Is there a time you need to hear back from them, and what kind of comments are you really looking for? Obviously, you don't want to be pushy because your readers are investing time in your work, but having said that, you also don't want to be waiting for months to hear back from them. The schedule you set might actually decide what method you end up using. I had an author actually ask me to critique a book he had in print, and he asked me if an electronic copy would work for me. I was able to make use of an electronic copy, but I warned him it would definitely take me a lot longer to get through that copy than it would on a hard copy. He was fine with that, so that's how we proceeded. The other factor you want to consider is manuscript control. When you write anything, my understanding is that copyright is automatic. Steps of actually filing copyright or using something like Creative Commons, but it isn't strictly necessary. Regardless, you want to ensure your audience understands that the work they're reviewing shouldn't be shared or distributed, unless, of course, that's what you want to have happen. Thanks for the great question. And if you have any questions or comments or feedback for me, you can reach me a number of ways. You can email me at feedback@getpublishedpodcast.com, or you can try out my brand new voicemail line, which is 206-339-1258. You can also reach me on Twitter. I'm mplested there. That's mplested. Or on Facebook, where I'm Michael Plested, and on FriendFeed, where I'm also Michael Plested. Whatever method you choose, I'd love to hear from you.
Hello there.
My name is...
Han Solo. I'm Captain of the Millennium Falcon.
No.
Lisa called Jar Jar Binks.
No.
Ben Kenobi?
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
No.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
No, Indiana Jim.
The princess?
The princess, she's here?
Princess, no. What's going on?
The intrepid archgeekologist.
I recognized your foul stench when I was brought on board.
Well, that's not very nice. Look, would you just let me talk for
once? Ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
Hey!
I am wondering, why are you here?
I'm here to invite you to listen to my podcast, The Adventures of Indiana Jim.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
Look, we talk about sci-fi and fantasy books and movies, creative writing, and what's hot in the world of podcasting and new media.
I knew that you were going to say that.
I also have interviews with authors and even talk a little football every now and then.
Are you slimy, double-crossing, no-good swindler?
Who says you can't be a geek and a sports fan?
Where are you taking this thing?
Oh, right. Podcast.indianajim.net.
And I am delighted to welcome J.C. Hutchins to the show today. J.C. is an award-winning novelist who is best known for his Seventh Son techno-thriller trilogy, which he released as a free serialized audiobook from 2006 to 2007. With approximately 100,000 downloads of his episodic fiction still occurring every month, Seventh Son is the most popular podcast novel series in history. He has been featured in the New York Times, The Washington Post, Time.com, AMA, and blogger and podcaster magazines, Asimov Science Fiction, on the BBC and Italian National Radio, and in more than 100 podcast interviews, including this one. Welcome to the show, JC.
Mike, it is an absolute honor and a pleasure to be here. How are you?
I am great. How are things going for you?
Things are always busy here in the Hutchins Kingdom, but I'm delighted to make the time to chat with you and your audience. Thanks so much for having me.
It is my pleasure. It's a real delight to have you with us today. You have been doing a lot in the podosphere, and as you said, it's a busy thing in the JC Kingdom. Who is JC Hutchins? Can you tell us a little bit about what you've done in podcasting and writing?
Sure. Well, I'm a novelist based in South Florida, United States, and have been writing fiction since 2002. That's when I began writing the Seventh Son podcast novel trilogy, which you mentioned in your introduction. Since then, I've also I've released all three novels in podcast form. Also released a groundbreaking multimedia spinoff anthology called Seventh Son Obsidian, and I'm currently releasing a podcast exclusive prequel novella to my new supernatural thriller novel that's out in bookstores now called Personal Effects Dark Art. I've been a writer all my life, and writing some goofy little comic books when I was a child to becoming a nonfiction storyteller in college and as a professional career for a little while. I was a newspaper reporter for a few years, and now I'm trying to carve my path in the publishing industry and trying to figure out a way to do this full time.
Excellent. Well, and you say you started writing Seventh Son in 2002. Was it always your intention to try to get Seventh Son published?
Certainly. Yeah, this was long before podcasting was even invented, and such an outlet or a distribution model didn't even exist when I started writing the book. It was my full intent to find an agent for Seventh Son. Interestingly, when I finished writing Seventh Son in 2004, and then began editing it, and finally put the final spit shine on it in 2005, I had written a 1,300 page manuscript.
Wow, that's a monster.
Indeed it is. And went to query agents and began the agenting process there and received deserved universal rejections, more than likely, I would like to think, because of its length and not of the quality of the work. And by the end of 2005, I was so kind of racked with rejection, what I call rejection depression, that I thought that Seventh Son was DOA. It deserved a toe tag. It was dead on arrival. And but during that time, I was also listening to podcasts and was introduced to podcast fiction mostly, and really kind of fell for the distribution model. And so I decided to give away Seventh Son, or the story of Seventh Son. And so I took that 1,300 page manuscript and I chopped it into thirds, the first act of the book becoming book one, Descent, the second act, book two, Deceit, etc. And that's how I managed to release the content. And thanks to the success of the podcast and the audience size and the community that grew around it, I was actually able to get a literary agent after all, and that happened in 2007.
Oh, excellent. And so the agent, obviously, from what I'm hearing, is the agent came along before the publisher did.
Correct. So the way it worked was that around March of, probably February or March of 2007, I had queried, well, golly, let's see. In 2005, I'd queried about 60 agents. And then by March of 2007, when I resumed the agent search, I queried probably a total of 250 to 300 agents. And of those 200, let's say 250, three came back with very strong nibbles. And of those three, one was very, very keen to represent the book, and I went with her. One of the things that did clearly differentiate me from other candidates or other authors was indeed the what they call in the industry – the author platform that I brought to the table, the fans that I had created from the podcast.
Right. Excuse me. It never hurts to bring an audience along with you, does it?
That's what I'm discovering is that while publisher, you know, it's never safe to assume that all of an author's platform that was cultivated online will purchase a novel. It is certainly there are certainly more sales built in than any typical unpublished author could bring to the table. You know, one of the things that the past 3.5 years have really brought into my life, which is good for which is very positive for a publisher, isn't just an audience and engagement there, but I mean, you know, you said it yourself in the introduction. I mean, hundreds of interviews I've done, making me media savvy. Dozens of promotional marketing plans and initiatives that I've released over the years, which makes me promotion keen, you know, promotion friendly. So you know, a lot of skill sets. I mean, you know, I design my own content. I record my own audio. I record and edit my own video, etc. So there's a lot of skill sets that that I bring to the table that a typical author, unpublished author, doesn't.
Right. So let's start with talking a little bit about the agent. I know not having an agent, and I haven't done an agent search at this point. Can you tell us a little bit about what your agent actually brings to the table for you? What kind of benefit does your agent give you?
Sure. Well, for me, you know, the agent story is a little slightly different. So I'll kind of talk about generally what an agent brings to the table, and then what my agent specifically brought to my table is that, of course, you know, an agent, you know, is not only going to be a champion for your work and do his or her very best to represent it to publishers for you know for contractual negotiations. But a very good agent should have connections and have a solid network and a Rolodex where you know they can reach out to editors and publishers and people in the industry to work angles and try to figure out ways to pitch your book to different publishing houses, particularly to editors who edit the kind of book that you know that you've written, you know, that kind of genre.
Right.
You know, and they're and at least for me, they're indispensable during the contract. Kind of experience. For me personally, you know, I acquired, you know, my agent and I, you know, got together. And then before, as she was attempting to find a home for Seventh Son, an opportunity fell in my lap, this personal effects dark art project, which actually came to me as a for hire project from St. Martin's Press. I looked at the project. I thought it was a great idea. Said, let's do this. Talked to my agent and you know, and she and I were bulldogs. And it's not that I don't like the people I'm doing business with. I absolutely adore them, but you know, there is art and then there is business. And I'm very, you know, keen and vociferous in maintaining as many rights as I can and being fairly compensated for my work. And so, you know, and that's where Kristen, my agent, became very, very helpful in that process. And then once we had signed the deal for for Personal Effects Dark Art, we then followed up with St. Martin's Press and said, well, we've got the Seventh Son thing. What do you think? They were keen to get cooking on that. And then once again, the contractual conversations began. So, you know, the opportunities came to me. I saw them as good ones, took advantage of them, and then brought my agent in on the kind of like the negotiation part.
Gotcha. Well, I know from what I've heard and what I've seen and what I've experienced, those opportunities don't come along every day. So you definitely have to strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I perceived Personal Effects Dark Art not only as a really interesting and very compelling and very disruptive kind of, in a good way, you know, a positively disruptive way of telling stories. It's a fantastic project, but also a way to get my foot in the door. You know, I always say that, you know, some people get in the front door of publishing. I snuck in through the basement window.
Well, I've got to say, I've got Personal Effects here, and it is definitely a unique book. Mm-hmm. Just the whole way that you've gone about adding the effects and tying those to the story. I would almost say that's very much you, because you talked a little bit about pimping your own work and coming up with your own marketing and your own, you know, your own properties that way. I think you've got a reputation for coming up with unique and very creative ideas, and I think personal effects certainly fits within that.
Yeah, thank you. It almost was like a combination of chocolate and peanut butter. Jordan Wiseman, who was the kind of the creator of the personal effects property, and I really, really, got along when we were working on the project. Our storytelling sensibilities clicked, and I think that he saw I certainly saw someone who was telling non-traditional stories, ways to really, really creative ways to. Engage an audience, and I'm sure that he saw something similar in me, someone who may not have as much non-traditional storytelling experience, but really was eager to learn and had a really interested fan base. So I mean, it was a perfect combination, and I hope I can work with him again.
Now, so with the personal effects, was Jordan Wiseman actually on the project before you or after you, or did you come on at the same time, or how did that work?
Well, Jordan Wiseman, who is an icon in the gaming industry, he's a he may be for your fans who like role-playing games, he founded the company FASA, FASA, in the 80s, and went on to create a tabletop superhero battle game called Hero Clicks, where you could fight Marvel characters against DC characters, stuff like that. Very cool a battle system for that game, and then went on to become a founding, what I call a founding father, practically invented a non-traditional form of online storytelling called the alternate reality game, which is at its very, very simplest kind of like a scavenger hunt. Puzzle based fiction where communities of readers or an audience kind of gets together and works together and to solve riddles that are kind of embedded in an online narrative that will, once those riddles are solved, will propel the community to the next website or the next web page or a phone number where they will call and receive another clue. It's like an unfolding mystery. So Jordan Wiseman, he and a couple other people really invented this genre of storytelling and very successfully, kind of explored it mostly for, marketing purposes and working with companies to market their work in this kind of viral, non-traditional way. And in 2007, he turned to St. Martin's Press and said, I've got this idea where we can bring the alternate reality game experience to a traditional novel where, when people buy the novel, they will indeed receive a book, a traditional book, but, accompanying the book will be tangible items, personal effects, the personal effects of a character featured in the book, and clues in the book and clues found in these absolutely authentic looking tangible personal effects will propel the readers online to websites or phone numbers or email accounts that they can hack to learn more about the story and acquire information or plot twists that simply cannot be experienced on the pages of the book. It's really kind of like fiction meets reality kind of vibe. He presented this idea to St. Martin's Press. St. Martin's Press said, "Hot damn, this is a great idea. Now we need to find a writer." And that's when an editor at St. Martin's Press, who was familiar with my work from the Seven Sun podcast, turned to me and said, "JC, what do you think?" That's how the ball got started there.
Very cool. And so you've already said that you'd like to work with Jordan Wiseman again. How did you find that collaboration effort? Was it very time consuming, or was it something that just kind of flowed naturally for you?
It flowed far more naturally than I expected. Mostly because authors fly solo. I mean, most novelists don't collaborate with other writers. They are kind of like the lone wolf, And I kind of perceived myself as that. But I also didn't want to pass up the opportunity. However, and I think that some of this had to do with the fact that Jordan and I had such keenly compatible storytelling sensibilities where, you know, for Jordan and I both, it's like, it's not about you and it's not about me. It's about the story. How can we make this story the very best it can be? And let's make this an egoless experience. Let's not be divas. And neither one of us were. We absolutely were servants to the story. And I found the collaboration, while, you know, it was time consuming in a positive way, in that, you know, we had to build, you know, the story concept and the plot and actually do an outline long before I ever wrote a word of the book. And that was a new experience to me. So the whole damn thing was mapped out, including the transmedia experience or the out of book experience, long before the book was written. So there was a lot of front end management that I wasn't accustomed to, but ran with it and learned quite a bit along the way. I think that one of the things that actually might have made me made the collaboration process far less effort, with required less effort or less pain than I expected, was I used to be a newspaper reporter, and newspaper reporters are consistently working with editors and photographers long before the story is written, long before the story is reported, to find the angle, to make battle plans. And so that highly collaborative environment of the newsroom, I think, kind of contributed to how easy that process was.
Excellent. Well, and you mentioned, you used the word transmedia. Did you have a chance to kind of experience how the personal effects were going to tie in, just so that you could maybe craft the story a little bit better to reflect that?
No. None of the personal effects were created when I was writing the book. In fact, some of the personal effects, the way they look, what they look like, the contents of them, all kind of hinged from the words that I'd written. For instance, there's a business card described in the novel. It's an appointment card. And on the front, you know, it's got an appointment time and date and name. But then on the back, as I describe in the book, there is a kind of like a list of kind of a personality traits that a person has scrawled onto the back of the business card or the card itself. And that was something that I wrote. And then when I got the book and I opened it up, and I'll be darned if that business card didn't have that stuff written on the back, it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. So a lot of the personal effects were kind of inspired by, or their appearance was directly influenced by what I'd written.
That's very cool, and it sounds like you've got kind of a unique perspective in that, you know, most authors, from my understanding, myself included, you know, we write the stories and we know exactly how they go from beginning to end, and so there's really no surprises. For you, you had the story written and then you get the book and you can go through and you have this whole new meta experience that goes beyond everything you've done.
Well, there is that. You know, for me, I mean, I absolutely knew and helped plot and conceive the out-of-book experience or the transmedia experience for personal effects. So I knew all of the twists and turns that take place beyond the book before I received a copy of the book. I think that what makes my kind of personal experience very, you know, kind of noteworthy is that I'm one of the few authors who can say that, you know, they can hold the driver's license of the character that they created.
And I know that some of the characters were created and they were alive and still are alive on Twitter. So, you know, they've really gone well beyond the pages of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a fascinating exploration, and I'm very, very proud of what we've done narratively and promotionally for personal effects Dark Art. I'm so proud of that book.
And I don't think you're done yet either. You seem to just keep pulling new stuff out of your hat all the time.
Yeah, well, the day I find myself sitting still is the day I'm going to cash it in.
Now, you had talked a little bit about, you know, coming up with new marketing materials, and I've talked a little bit on the show about how important it is for an author to be prepared to do some of their own promotion. Can you give us a bit of a glimpse into the things that you've done and you know, what's worked and what hasn't?
Sure. Well, I have done, golly, I mean, I've done so many promotional stunts in the past 3.5 years, I can't remember. I've forgotten more than I remember these days. I was the first podcast novelist with Scott Sigler to actually do an in-narrative promotional crossover where characters from my novel, my podcast novel that was being released at the time, appeared in his book. And vice versa. So it was like a cross universe kind of thing where both books took place in the same timeline, in the same universe, if only for, you know, this particular time that the books were rolling out in podcast form. Of course, we invited our listeners to spot these crossover moments, and those who did successfully, you know, could win a prize, you know. So this helped both of us because it helped cross-pollinate our fans, and to this day, I still receive feedback, and I know that Scott Sigler does too, receives feedback about this particular cross promotion and how it got them interested in our works. I've solicited tons of fan created content for Seven Sun. My fans were so interested in kind of participating in being a community that they were creating artwork and music and poetry and short stories and all kinds of crazy stuff, all kind of tied into or inspired by Seven Sun. And I found out, you know, I would post that content online and thank them vociferously for it, so that helped build the community. For Personal Effects Dark Art, I have done quite a bit. As far as I know, I invented a new form of book trailer called what I call the video blurb or the blurb, V-L-U-R-B. And blurbs kind of combine a book trailer with a blurb or an endorsement of the book. And what I did was is that I, you know, crafted, I, with the help of a film editor, I crafted a very intense introduction and closing sequence featuring some really kind of spooky imagery and evocative music that would then transition into a video endorsement by an iconic storyteller. I was able to get the creator of Friday the 13th to endorse the book on video, the creator of Final Destination to endorse the book on video, the creator of The Blair Witch Project, a couple of New York Times bestselling horror novels, screenwriters, just like directors. It just went on. The director of My Bloody Valentine 3D. It just went on and on and on. And I'm very, very proud of that innovation that I did there. The personal effect Sword of Blood, the prequel novella that I'm currently releasing, that's another first in publishing. No one else has done a podcast novella to prequel, particularly to celebrate the release of a work in print. So those are a couple of the things that I've done. If anything comes to mind that you'd like for me to specifically talk about, I'd be happy to.
You're absolutely right. You've been a huge innovator, and I hate to say it, but you're setting the bar pretty high for the rest of us. And on that note, we'll end this segment of the interview here. Next episode, we will complete the interview with J.C. Hutchins. I hope you're looking forward to that as much as I am. Now, just a note, you'll have noticed that the audio quality of the interview deteriorated over the course of our discussion. I'm not sure what caused that, but I hope you enjoyed the first portion of my interview with J.C. Hutchins. And I hope you'll join me next episode to hear the completion of it.
The Grand Design of Nine.
Those words haunt the mind of Brinkvale psychiatric therapist, Zach Taylor, when his elderly patient, a remorseless killer, utters that phrase. Zach embarks on a quest to glean its cryptic meaning. The answers lie with the patient's psychic granddaughter. But Hen is crazier than the people Zach treats, and the mystical great blade of blood he soon pursues may be more dangerous and deadly than Zach ever imagined. J.C. Hutchins' Personal Effects, Sword of Blood,
is a prequel audio novella to his supernatural thriller novel, Personal Effects, Dark Art. Learn more about both stories and become a part of the Personal Effects universe at jchutchins.net.
And that's our show. If you'd like to leave me any feedback, comments, or questions, you can reach me at feedback@getpublishedpodcast.com, or you can try out my voicemail line at 206-339-1258. I look forward to hearing from you. Until next time, work hard, never give up, and maybe you too will get published. Thanks for listening.
Get Published is an Irreverent Muse production.